We're going to continue in discussing hakdamos of interesting and important svarim. So one of the more important svarim of the last 100 years ago, I think that they just celebrated recently, the 100th anniversary of the publishing of the Mishnah Berurah, I think last year. They just, what?
No tachlin all year,
yeah, maybe. So they celebrated the 100th anniversary of the publishing of the Mishnah Berurah. I think the Mishnah Berurah was actually published over several years. It was an 8-year span that it took till they published one volume after another. Rav Shechter often likes to point out that the Mishnah Berurah is somewhat revolutionary in that he paskins halacha based completely, seems pretty much completely on what earlier svarim said, and not nearly as much on minhag and on what people were actually doing. That's one of the major differences people like to point out between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah, is that the Aruch HaShulchan takes minhag into account much more than the Mishnah Berurah does. The Mishnah Berurah is very Sefer based. He collects all the different svarim. He always, Rav Shechter always says that you know, people sometimes criticize Rav Soloveitchik as having such a mechudishtik style and a different derech and psak. He said actually Rav Soloveitchik's derech and psak was very straightforward. It was a very normal derech and psak. There weren't too many chidushim. Mishnah Berurah is a chidush in every page. He says Mishnah Berurah is mechadesh all the time. He didn't find that Rav Soloveitchik is such a mechadesh. Of course, Mishnah Berurah was written by the Chafetz Chaim, who was most known by his Sefer Chafetz Chaim and is known more to us probably as a tzaddik than as a Talmud Chacham. In Mishnah Berurah you see his full prowess as a Talmud Chacham. The truth is, in Sefer Chafetz Chaim you also see his full prowess as a Talmud Chacham, just where he collects all the different rishon, shakes out every rishon and all the analysis on everything anybody ever sneezed about Lashon Hara is actually in some ways more impressive than writing Mishnah Berurah, where I would have known to look in the Magen Avraham and the Taz and the Machzor Shekel and all the classic commentators also. The godless was that he took the time to do it all and gather it all together, but perhaps not nearly as great a reflection of his godless as the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, as Sefer Chafetz Chaim was. Just also, again, introductory remarks. This is just all by way of introduction. The Mishnah Berurah in recent years seems to have been accepted as the posek achron, as the final word on halachos relating to Aruch Chaim. It was not always viewed as the Posek Achron. They say, I think, that the Chazon Ish had a lot to do with making the Mishnah Berurah the Posek Achron. I read somewhere recently that there was a rumor that Rav Aaron Cutler would dafka always walk around with the Mishnah Berurah in his hand to send a message that the Mishnah Berurah is the Posek Achron, that everyone should always walk around with the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is the, you see pictures all the time of Rav Aaron Cutler with the Mishnah Berurah. It just never struck me as, yeah, he has a Mishnah Berurah. But you see, I think one of the famous pictures of Rav Aaron Cutler, he's holding a Mishnah Berurah. So he's he's viewed by many as the Posek Achron. Rav Shechter didn't understand why. Rav Shechter says all the time that he didn't own a Mishnah Berurah until he got married. He said, it's so difficult. It's very hard to read Mishnah Berurah. It's not such an easy sefer. He wanted an easy halacha sefer to know what to do. You open up a Chayyadam. Chayyadam is very straightforward, written paragraph form, very easy to read. Mishnah Berurah is very difficult to go through in the Bir Halachas with the further analysis. It's not so pasha to read the Mishnah Berurah, but for whatever reason, it's been very widely accepted. And along with that, I think Dr. Grach, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, wrote an article once where he tried to explain how the popularity of the Mishnah Berurah has led to a certain culture of chumrah, because the Mishnah Berurah, as some people like to say, the Mishnah Berurah paskins the chumrah a lot because he paskins like a tzaddik paskins rather than like a rav paskins. He's a tzaddik, so he never wants to violate any of the shittos. So you should always tavalav bracha be machmir like all the shittos. Whereas a rav of a community maybe would have paskined a little bit differently, taking minhag into account a little more and certainly trying to justify the minhagim of those who are mekil. If you read the Aruch HaShulchan, you'll see the Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan probably didn't gain the popularity that it could have because of its greatest strength. The greatest strength of the Aruch HaShulchan is that he presents the entire sugya. He starts with the Gemara, then he goes to the Rishonim, and then he shows how it plays out in Halacha, which is really good when you're learning a sugya. It's not so good when you want to look up a quick Halacha, because you have to go through all that to just get to the bottom line. So Mishnah Berurah is a little bit easier to find the halacha than it is in the Aruch HaShulchan. So the Aruch HaShulchan never got that popularity of being the Posek Achron, or the one that everyone necessarily goes to. But there's no minimizing the role that the Mishnah Berurah plays in any base medrash in the world. You aren't sure if you're going to find a whole host of very important sefarim in Jewish history. But one sefer you could be guaranteed you're going to find in every single base medrash in the entire world is a sefer Mishnah Berurah. It's one that, you know, it comes Tanakh, Shas. Even the Tanakh you won't find in a lot of Batei Medrash these days. But Shas and the Mishnah Berurah, you're pretty much set that you're going to find wherever you go. Shas, Mishnah Berurah, and the Rambam. Those are probably the three first orders of any base medrash in the world. The first sefarim that they order. So I want to go through with you at least the Hakdama to the Mishnah Berurah, to Chelek Aleph of the Mishnah Berurah, and maybe if we have time, the Hakdama to Chelek Gimel as well. He has a separate Hakdama to Chelek Gimel. No, he doesn't have Hakdama to any of the other volumes, just Aleph and Gimel. Aleph because it's the first one, so he wants to let you know what he's doing, what his intention is in writing the Sefer, and Gimel because it's Hilcha Shabbos. So he felt that Hilcha Shabbos warrants its own Hakdama. That was probably, I would imagine, the most difficult of the six to write was probably, well, Gimel and Dalid, Shabbos and Erevin were probably the most challenging of the volumes to write. So says the Chafetz Chaim at the very beginning of the Hakdama, that man is a unique creature. If you look on page 4 is where the Hakdama starts. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything in 6 days, and then he created man on the sixth day. And he says, this Adam, Shebekamuso hu miktanei habruim, va'acharisam bizman. Man is the smallest in number of all of the creatures, and is also the last one. Man is the last one to arrive on the scene on planet Earth. Aval be'echuso im yiskel istavik b'Hashem yaretz lasos shutzono hu roshem b'chashivos. But the thing about man is that quality-wise, we can be the if we connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then we are the best. We are the most chashuv if we connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So of all the things God created in this vast world of His, we are the smallest in number, but the greatest in quality. But notice He adds a caveat: we are greatest in quality if we use our potential. So one might have thought, wait a second, and if we don't use our potential, aren't we still greater than an animal? Meaning, even if we don't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and let's say we just study science and math or whatever it is, and we never really connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, does it really put us beneath an animal, that or on par with an animal? We're not the Be'echuso, we're not the greatest if we don't use our potential and connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this reminds me a little bit of the comment of the Kuzari, famous comment of the Kuzari, where the Kuzari lists the different levels of Bria, the different levels of things in creation. That there is the lowest level is what we call a domain, that something that has no life to it whatsoever, like a rock. This desk is a domain. It will never grow, it will never develop, it is what it is, it's not going to change. Then on the second level up, you have a tzomeach, something that can be nourished with planting, with sunlight, with a tree, a plant, a flower, something like that. Then the next level up is a behema, that not only does it grow, but it actually has nishmas chayim, it actually has a certain life to it. An animal is actually a living being. So it's a much, much higher level than just a tzomeach. And then the level above that is ben adam, is a medaber. A person is able to communicate, a person is able to speak, which an animal is unable to do, and a person is able to think. So you say, okay, well, that alone makes a person special. That alone is what puts a person on a higher level. So the Kuzari writes, if I'm not mistaken, that, or maybe the Maral says this, that the way to define the difference between the levels is that if, and then the Kuzari has a fifth level is Yisrael, is a Jewish person. That a Jew is has a little extra kedusha. I think I pointed out to you last week that in Bris they used to say that. And the sixth level is Reb Chaim. They held Reb Chaim was like Malach Hashem. But in the fifth level, we assume is a Jew. A Jew is the highest level of creation. So I think the Maral writes that how do you tell what's just something that has different characteristics? Like, how do I know, let's say, that a good-looking person is not a different category than an ugly person? Is it? They're both in the category of person, we assume, and they're just different types. Blonde-haired person, black-haired person. How do I know what makes it a different category and what doesn't make it a different category? So I think the Maral writes that if you were to take away that which makes it unique, and it would knock it down below the item below it on the list, then it makes it a different category. Meaning, take for example a tzomeach. Something that grows, something that a tree, a flower. If you were to take away its tzmicha, you take away its nourishment from the karka, its connection to the karka, it doesn't just become a domain. A domain would do nothing. What happens when you cut a flower? it for a while it's a domain, and then it shrivels up, and it, you know, it bio disintegrates, it becomes nothing. It goes even less than a domain. So that itself is a simen, that if you take away that which makes it unique, that it will go beneath it. If you take away the chayim from an animal, you kill an animal, it doesn't continue to grow like a tzameach, it becomes a domain. You have nice leather shoes because they killed an animal, it doesn't grow, nothing happens to them, it becomes a domain. It goes beneath the level below it. So maybe that's the Vart Chavetz Chaim is saying over here, that you have a Ben Yisrael, you have someone who's a Jew, who has the ability to be on the highest level of all of Bria, right? But if he doesn't meet that potential, he's going to go beneath the level below him. If he fails to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's not Stam that he becomes like a behemah. He becomes pachos mi behema. He becomes even worse. So it is considered to be something that could knock a person down several rungs on the ladder of Bria. But anyway, Chavetz Chaim starts out by saying, we have the ability, the potential for greatness. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us here last. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted everything to be ready for us so that we will be able to use all of the tools that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put on this earth to be able to accomplish on this earth. And he says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us on this earth to accomplish, it wasn't because HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed us to accomplish. All of this is for our own benefit, not for the benefit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything that we do to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us. It doesn't help HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says Chavetz Chaim weiter now in the second paragraph. V'hine milas kayom azel l'charo enu meduktak. He quotes a pasuk. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, "Ko amar Hashem im lo brisi yomim v'lay l'chuka shemayim v'aretz l'samti." No, I'm sorry. Next part. Pasuk in Devarim, Perek Vav. Ve'itzavenu Hashem lasos es kol l'chuka me'ela l'tov lanu kol ha'yamim l'chiyosenu kayom azel. What does the pasuk say? Hashem commanded us to do all of the Torah for our own good, all the days that we live, ki hayom hazeh, like this day. So he says, what's ki hayom hazeh? Come and teach me. So says Mishnah Berurah, says Chavetz Chaim, v'amarti levar zeh al pi ma shebiarti mikvar sakas parshas achrimos. Says if I explain to you a different pasuk, you'll understand what ki hayom hazeh is coming to teach me. Pasuk in achrimos says, these are Sanhedrin connections. These are the sugyas that we're doing. Pikuach nefesh, that you have a requirement to live by the Torah. That's the din in the Torah. That's what the pasuk tells me. V'chay behem says Unklus on the pasuk. V'chay behem, v'chaye alma. What does v'chaye alma mean? It means olam haba. It doesn't mean olam hazeh. So v'chay behem is not only about olam hazeh. It's about v'chay behem in olam haba. So says Mishnah Berurah, everything in this world, from the lowest creature on earth to the highest being in heaven, needs some sort of sustenance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Without sustenance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing exists. We do not believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world once and then abandoned it and let us figure it out on our own. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and constantly needs to sustain the life that He created. And therefore, it's obvious to all of us that different creatures need to eat different things. If we were to take on the diet of a snake, let's say, we would soon die. If we were to try to take on the diet of whatever it is, every creature requires its own kind of sustenance. Even within humanity, the Gemara talks about people who are used to a very fine food, type of food, that then become poor. The Gemara Ksuvos talks about stories about how they then they just can't bear eating lower level food, the fast food joints or whatever, you know, eating that kind of thing, and they die from it. They just can't handle it. You become used to something that's more refined, a better type of Michael. That different people and different creatures require different types of sustenance. Malachim also require sustenance. But we know when Avram Avinu fed the Malachim, Malachim don't need to eat. There's no achila for Malachim. So what kind of sustenance do they get? Their sustenance must come in some sort of spiritual form. The sustenance that Malachim get is not a physical sustenance, it's a spiritual sustenance. So human beings are tricky, because we're not a Malach and we're not an animal. An animal sustenance is purely physical. A Malach sustenance is purely spiritual. we're made up of a little bit of both. We have the Nefesh HaBehemi and the Nefesh HaRuchani. We have this Ruchni side to us, this Chelek Elokami Mal side to us, and then we also have the physical side to us. And in order to sustain ourselves, we need both. Now, it's obvious to us that we need to eat. We won't live. The guf will die without eating. It says in Mishnah Berurah, it should be equally obvious to us that the neshama will die without its sustenance. And the neshama needs sustenance while it's in the body and after the body leaves us. Just like he compares, he gives a mashal, he says, these are multiple needs that a person has. Just like if you eat, then it doesn't like, you still might need to change your clothing when your clothing gets dirty. It's not like, oh, I ate, I already took care of sustaining myself. No, there are multiple levels of sustaining yourself. You need to eat, you need to bathe, you need to clothe. These are all different things you need to do. So spiritual sustenance and physical sustenance are two different things. You can't assume that the physical sustenance is going to take care of you spiritually. That's why he says, why does he use that mashal of clothing? Because when we refer to the relationship between the guf and the neshama, the guf is referred to as the clothing of the neshama. So when you eat, it's ki'ilu, you're sending your clothing to the dry cleaners. But you still need to eat. You still need to, sending your clothing to the dry cleaners is not going to sustain you. You still need to have lunch. So when your neshama sends its, eats, when you eat physical food, it's ki'ilu, the neshama sent its clothing to the dry cleaners, got it cleaned and taken care of. Pressed its clothing, cleaned its clothing. But the neshama still needs to eat. The neshama still needs to live. The neshama still needs to survive. So where does our spiritual food come from? So it's obvious. The spiritual food comes from doing mitzvot that we do in this world. And the mitzvot that we do have nitzchis. They're everlasting. And they feed our neshamas, which have that same characteristic of being nitzchi. Our neshamas are going to last way beyond where our guf lasts. And that's the explanation of the Gemara Maseches Brachos. The Gemara Brachos says, Tzadikim Yoshvim, Brachos Daf Yud Zayin, that what's it going to be like in the Olam HaEmes? Tzadikim Yoshvim, Vitroseim Brasheim, Venenin Miziv Hashchina. That Tzadikim are going to be sitting there with a crown on their heads, and they're going to be enjoying the splendor and the glory of the Shechina, which means that there's going to be some sort of spiritual sustenance that we enjoy from the mitzvos. That nitzchius is going to be enjoyed from the neshama, which is going to last forever, is going to get to enjoy the mitzvos which are done, which are supposed to last forever. That's stage one, step one, to try to answer. Remember, all this is to try to answer, what are the words kayom hazeh doing in the pasuk of ve'yitzvenu Hashem la'asos kol hachukim ha'ela l'tov lanu kol yom l'chayisenu kayom hazeh. So that's step one. Step one is that v'chai behem, we have to live on a spiritual level and support ourselves, sustain ourselves spiritually the same way we need to sustain ourselves physically. Step two, when we say v'chaye olam nata b'sochenu, we're acknowledging, what's chaye olam? Chaye olam, we have an expression in halacha of chaye olam versus chaye sha'a. End of life situations, if you're involved in the difficult decisions, end of life. So one of the issues that we face is there's a big difference between sustaining life for chayolam and chayesha'a. Chayesha'a means, okay, you'll be able to keep him alive for another hour. Chayolam is you'll be able to keep him alive for a normal lifetime, to live significantly. Where do you draw the line between chayolam and chayesha'a is very tricky, and the reason it's very tricky is that all chayim in this world is chayesha'a. Everyone who's ever lived, excluding the people who are here right now, has died, meaning not just in this room. Don't worry about what's going on outside of this room. Everyone who's ever lived on this earth, who, excluding the people who are living right now, are still alive, everyone who was born more than 100 and some odd years ago, has died. It's always happened. All life is chayei olam. There's no such thing as chayei olam. So what are we saying? What kind of joke is this? Chayei olam nata b'sochenu? Hashem, you should give us chayei olam? Why would he give us chayei olam? No one else ever got chayei olam. I shouldn't say everybody. The Gemara goes through five people that didn't die. But whatever it is. No one else ever got chayei olam. Five people? I don't know. A couple of people that didn't die. But most people don't get chayei olam. What kind of request is that? So says Mishmur, no. What we're acknowledging is that a certain part of us is nitzchi. And we're saying that in Birchas HaTorah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you give us the Torah, that gives us our Nitzchius. That's what gives us the ability to last forever through the part of us that actually lasts forever, through the Neshama that lasts forever. Chafetz Chaim suggests that a non-Jewish Neshama has no such ability, and that once the body fails, the Nitzchius is gone. The everlasting element of it is gone. I don't know where he knows that from. I don't know what the source is. He just sort of says it. Where does he say that? He says, Masha'in Kain, in the paragraph that begins with Vizehu. At the end of that paragraph, he writes, Masha'in Kain, Masha'in Kain, Ba'ovdei Kochavim, Lo Yuchal Lichyos HaNefesh, Rak Ba'odu Mechuberes L'Guf, Validei Mazon HaGuf. He says, Ba'inovdei Kochavim, the Neshama is there, but it only lives as long as the Guf lives. And once the Neshama is gone, the Guf is gone also. I don't know where. I always thought otherwise, and maybe someone could help me out over here. I always thought that we do, one of the things that distinguishes Judaism from every other religion is that we believe you don't have to be one of the tribe to get Olam Haba. And every other religion believes, what?
Specifically Ovi Kochavim.
Oh, you think he's saying Dafka someone who's Novid Avodah Zarah? Maybe. I don't know. Because I always thought, you know, who's famously says this? Rabbi Jonathan Sachs likes to point that out, I think. That what makes Judaism special and different than every other religion is that we believe that Goyim can get Olam Haba also. That there's such a thing as Tzadikei Umos HaOlam. Maybe not the same spot as Moshe Rabbeinu in Olam Haba, but they also get Olam Haba. I don't know. I don't have sources really in either direction off the top of my head. But I just found that line like a little bit striking. I don't know. I'm not sure where he gets that from. But either way, that's not critical to his major point over here. He says when the Torah tells us, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Re'ei, Nasati Lufnechem Hayom Es HaChayim Ves HaTov. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I've given you the Chayim and the Tov. Because it literally is able, I mean the Tov, the Torah, the mitzvah that Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us, literally is Chayim. It is life. We say, Eitz Chayim Hin L'machazikim Ba. It's not like a melitza. You know, it's as good as life itself. It's as precious as life itself. No, it mamish is life. Because there's a significant part of us, the Chelek HaNeshama, that will not live without it. It's the food that keeps us going. So it's mamish life. He says that explains Birchas Kriya Shema. Because God has an Avas Olam for us, that's why he gave us the Torah. Right, why do we have Birchas? We talk about Torah, Birchas Kriya Shema. When we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu has this Avas Olam, this everlasting love. What does Avas Olam, everlasting, mean? It means that it lasts forever. But we don't last forever, so how does he love us forever? We don't last forever, we're gone after 120 years. So how could he possibly love us forever? No, because we do last forever, if we latch onto the Torah. So that's why the whole theme of the bracha is about Torah. That when you latch onto the Torah, then we attach ourselves to Nitzchius, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets to love us forever. Because we're going to be around forever. Not in a physical sense, obviously, in a spiritual sense. So, in the world of spiritual food, says the Chafetz Chaim, there are two types of food, just like in the world of physical food. Physical food, you need to have bread and water to survive. But if you want to enjoy life a little bit, you know, so then you have sushi and wine and, you know, whatever else they serve at nice places. You have some of your good stuff. You have the part of the things that you don't need. Like you could live. Probably, I imagine, without sushi or steak or whatever. There are people that do it. But you could sustain your physical body, but you won't enjoy it. You won't have that same fulfillment. So Chafetz Chaim says, within the world of Torah, you also have that. We have the bread. The bread is halacha. Without halacha, you're just not going to live. It just won't exist. Your neshama can't survive without halacha. And then there's Sisrei Torah, Sodos HaTorah, interesting, deeper types of things that you could study that give a little more excitement and enjoyment and vivaciousness to your life. But without the halacha, you don't have the bread. I mean, you can't. You're not going to make it. So he writes that, think about how careful we are, how anxious we get when we miss a meal. You know, like you go to a simcha or something, and like you know. the waiter is, God forbid, 10 minutes late and bring the food to the table. That table has food. What's going on over here? It's like you get all anxious. What's going on? Oh, I just because I'm a little younger than everybody else. I don't know what's going on. How do you miss me? I asked for chicken. I don't. And it, like, you know, you just stuffed your face for an hour straight at the shmorg. Like, you might be able to survive another 10 minutes. It's shaykh that you'll survive another 10 minutes. So, but we get all anxious about our food, about physical food. Okay, whether that's right or not right. At the very least, we get, if we don't have food for that day, we don't have a plan of where food is going to come from that day, we start to get nervous. You know, we're a little spoiled over here. We have kosher food all over the place, and, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll pay for lunch. And if I don't have any money, I'll use my parents' credit card, and I'll pay for lunch. So we're good. We got no problems. But can you imagine waking up in the morning and not knowing if you're going to have food that day? How anxious one would be and how nervous one would be if you don't know where your next meal is coming from? You know, you read about or speak to people who went through the Holocaust and just not knowing if they were going to get a bread ration that day. Aside from whether they were going to die and everything else, whether they can get brutally murdered, just not knowing they're going to have food that day. That would make us extremely nervous. So he says, if we're that nervous about our guf, which is here for Sacha Kol, 120 years, there's no real mucker, I don't think, for 120 years, but whatever, you know, usually if we're lucky, it's 120 years. So we're not going to be that nervous if we don't have food for our neshama. You wake up in the morning, you're not sure, I'm not going to make it to yeshiva today, I don't know if I'm going to be able to learn today. Like, do we have anxiety about that? Are we nervous about it? That's the food for our neshama. And that's going to give us chayyola. That's the food that's really going to sustain us. So if we're so careful, do whatever it takes to buy food to sustain our bodies, which are going to die anyway. So we should do a lot more to sustain our neshamas. Says the Chavetz Chaim, that's what the pasuk means. This is all to answer one kasha, right? Why does the pasuk say, Kodesh Baruch Hu wants l'tov lanu kol hayamim l'chayoseinu ki hayom hazeh? So he says, ki hayom hazeh is telling us, how is it that we're going to be able l'tov lanu kol hayamim, to have goodness forever? So he says, the way to have goodness forever is look at how you sustain your body ki hayom hazeh. Hayom hazeh being in this world, olam hazeh. Look at at how careful you are to sustain your body in this world, and that should serve as a mashal, as a way to educate you on how you're supposed to sustain your neshama forever. That's the pshat, the explanation of the pasuk. I don't know if you call it pshat, but that's the explanation that he says of the pasuk. Then he moves on to discuss the chashivas of Torah. Certainly, we're all familiar with the Mishnah in Maseches Peah, where the Mishnah tells us that, I just want to find where he quotes it. The Mishnah tells us, the first Mishnah in Peah, Eilu Dvarim Shadim Ochel Perasayim Bol Mazeh, etc. Keren Kamas Olam Abba, and we go through a whole list of very important mitzvahs, and then we finish the list, Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Talmud Torah is more important than anything else. There's a famous statement of the Gra in Shnos Eliyahu, based on Yerushalmi, that every single word that a person learns in Torah is a mitzvah sasei on its own. I think he did a cheshbon. If you learn for an hour straight, speaking at a normal pace, how many mitzvahs one can accumulate in an hour of learning? It's a lot. You're surprised how much you could speak in an hour. So every single word of Torah is a separate mitzvah sasei. Chashivas of Torah is recognizable in the reward. We find that a lot of times, that when we try to measure how bad an avera is, which is a worse avera. So we often, you know, on the one hand, the Mishnah tells us we're not supposed to try to figure out, you know, we're not supposed to try to treat an avera kala different than an avera chamura, but at the same time we do recognize that there is such a thing as an avera kala and avera chamura. That which has a lesser onesh usually is considered to be a lesser avera. That which has a greater onesh, that which you're chayv skila for, is usually considered to be a greater avera. Same is true with mitzvahs. A lesser mitzvah will be lesser reward. A greater mitzvah will be greater reward. And what's the reward for Talmud Torah? First of all, it's quick to come. The reward is quick to come, every single word. And the reward is overwhelming. It's Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. We get a reward compared to all these other mitzvahs put together. So it's pretty phenomenal. So what should a person learn? If a person is going to learn, he wants to sustain his neshama, so what should he focus his main energy in learning on? Asks the Chafetz Chaim in his introduction to Mishnah Berurah. What do you think he's going to say? He says, obviously, Gemara Maseches Brachos says, that Hashem loves the Sha'ar Mitzuyanim Bahalacha more than everything else, more than all the Batei Midrashos and everything else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oyev Hashem Sha'arei Tzion Mikol Mishkanos Yaakov. The Gemara says, the Pasuk means Oyev Hashem Sha'ar Mitzuyanim Bahalacha Yosem Mibatei Knesios Batei Midrashos Shabbi Yaakov. All the Batei Midrashos, Batei Knesios don't compare to the Sha'ar Mitzuyanim Bahalacha. He quotes the in Yerideya, the Shach quotes in the name of the Prisha, Yerideya Sim Resh Rem Vav, that a person has a chiyuv every single day to learn halacha. Shalim would maybe lidei maisa. I think they say that someone asked Chaznish once, what should he do if he has just enough time to learn one Seder, either Musar or halacha? So should he learn Musar, should he learn halacha? Should he learn Yer Shemayim, or should he learn halacha, what to do? So I think they say the Chaznish said Pasha that you should, I mean, this famous answer I think they say from Yisrael Salanter is learn Musar and then you'll realize that you have more time in the day and then you'll have time to learn halacha also. But the Chaznish, I think they said Pasha, you learn halacha. Because you learn Musar, your neshama will be on fire with Yerushalayim, and then you're going to do everything wrong. You'll just do averus all day because you have no idea how to keep the Torah. So more than getting your neshama on fire with Yerushalayim, just know what to do. You have to know how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you have to learn halacha each and every day. Gemara in Megillah, Daf Chav Ches, Tanu Be'el Yahu, Kol Lashon HaLachas B'Kol Yom, Muftach Lo Shu Ben Olam Haba, that someone who learns halachas every day is going to be a Ben Olam Haba. Medrash Shachar Tov, Chafetz Chaim quotes, that a person should learn two halachas in the morning, two halachas at night, and he's yotzei the mitzvah of Yigisabo Yomam V'Layla, that is a complete fulfillment of Yigisabo Yom V'Layla, two in the morning, two at night. Okay, so good. So now I've narrowed it down. I know that my guf needs food that I knew before I opened up a Chafetz Chaim. What I learned from the Chafetz Chaim is my neshama needs food also. Good. I know that there's different type of food, and I know that the best type of food or most basic type of food my neshama needs is halacha. That's Torah in general, halacha in specific. Now, which halachas? There's so much halacha. Maybe I should learn all the halachas of, of Evan Ezer. I should learn all the halachas Gittin. That should be my main focus. How do I know what I should learn? So says Chafetz Chaim, all of halacha is important, but none are more important than Or HaChaim. Because Or HaChaim is what you do every single day. It's forming your daily habits. You know, it's always good. I always thought, for myself personally, I probably never learned Mishnah Berurah more intensely than I did in my years in Israel after high school. When I was and probably my last year of high school also, just learning then how to behave on a daily basis, and it's habit forming. It's during those times where you're still developing, you're still growing, where you could develop your habits and you base it on the halacha. And then, like, you may not remember every sivkat in Mishnah Berurah, but you're doing it already because you've been doing it for years. Because when you're developing your habits, that's what you're doing. You're learning it as you're developing. So it's very critical to learn Or HaChaim, because Or HaChaim is what you do every single day. You're not likely to forget the things you do every single day. So you may not know, was it a shach? Was it a Magen Avraham? Was it a Taz? You may not know exactly where it comes from, but as you learn it and do it and put it into practice, it's going to become a part of who you are. It's going to be what you do. He says, maybe that's Pshar Shmartim Es Chukosei Ves Mishpata Yesher Yasa Osam HaAdam. So maybe the pasuk is telling us which parts we're supposed to learn first. That what are the chukosai and mishpatai that you're supposed to do? That you're supposed to learn first? Asher yaso sam ha'adam, the things that you do every day, the things that you do. That's what you should learn because you need to know what to do. So Chafetz Chaim laments that people don't learn Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim. So he's obviously trying to explain why he wrote this book. So he's going to say, people are, obviously where he's heading is, people aren't learning Or HaChaim because they don't have a Mishnah Berurah yet. Once they have a Mishnah Berurah, then it's going to solve all the problems of why people don't learn Or HaChaim. So what are the reasons that people don't learn Or HaChaim? He says there are two reasons. First of all, we already saw the Hakdamah to the Shulchan Aruch, the Hakdamah to the Beis Yosef and to the Shulchan Aruch, where Shulchan Aruch writes explicitly, I don't want you learning Halacha straight from Shulchan Aruch. It's meant to be a quick Cliff's Notes on the Beis Yosef. It's not meant to be a Halacha Sefer. Shulchan Aruch is there because you might be confused by the various opinions in the Beis Yosef. So after you learn the Beis Yosef, Shulchan Aruch gives you a little bit of direction. Tell you, no, we hold like the Rambam and not like anybody else, which is all pretty much what he says in every Sif. Anyway, we forget all the other Shittas, we hold like the Rambam. So Shulchan Aruch gives you direction when you're confused by what is it, the array and this one, that one, all these different Shittas gives you direction. In a single paragraph of Shulchan Aruch, without the Shulchan Aruch telling you, you will have Dinim D'Oraisa, you'll have Dinim D'Rabbanan, you'll have Minhagim, you'll have Al-Khachili, you'll have B'dievet, and you'll have no idea. Why? Why does the Shulchan Aruch tell me all these things? He doesn't tell me because he assumes you know it because you already read the Beis Yosef. Only problem is we don't all read the Beis Yosef. And he says, if you really learn it well, then it could take many, many days. And the harder ones could take weeks and weeks and weeks, just for a single siman in Shulchan Aruch. And people simply don't have the dedication, the time to do it right. And he gives that as an example, interestingly, Siman Lamed Beis. He says, Siman Lamed Beis in Aruch Chaim, if you really try to learn that, forget about it. Anyone know what Siman Lamed Beis is? Tefillin. Very good. You learned it, right? Okay, good. So he says it will be very, very difficult. And he says, and plus there's so many achronim, you have to have so many svarim. You have to find everything that everybody says, and then you don't know if you're going to find everything. And you can't just be machmir all the time because you can't find everything, because a lot of times if you're machmir, it's a chumadasi l'day kula. You're machmir on one end, you end up being mekel on the other end. So that's one problem. One problem is, it's just, it's not, Shulchan Aruch doesn't lend itself to be learned in a normal way. Second problem is that you're never going to find everything that there is to know, all the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, another problem with the Shulchan Aruch as we have it, is that we have a Shulchan Aruch with the Magen Avraham and the Taz, whatever. But what about all the books that have been written in the last couple of hundred years, says the Chafetz Chaim? Even already since Chafetz Chaim, Piskei Tshuvos, right, recently in Eretz Yisrael came out, because to address all of the Tshuva Svarim that have been written in the last 100 years, to bring those into the picture. You always have to be accounting for the newer things that have come in. He says, yeah, Ber Hetiv is very good, summarizes Magen Avraham, summarizes the Taz, but that was 130 years before the Mishnah Berura. And it was before the El Yerava, it was before the Maimon Mordechai, it was before so many of the basic Achronim. And he says, yeah, Shari Tshuva tells you about a lot of great Tshuvas, but the Shari Tshuva never quotes Prima Gadim, and the Prima Gadim is the most important Sefer in Aruch Chaim, and Shari Tshuva totally misses that. So he says, plus you have Rabbi Kiveger, Chayada, Machs Shekel, Dar Chaim. There's so many Svarim out there. There's just a lot that you don't get on the one page of the Shulchan Aruch. So it says, Chafetz Chaim, therefore I present to you the solution to all your problems. If you've seen the Art School video about the Art School, about the Art School app, it's, they say it in probably a bit more over-the-top kind of way, because Chafetz Chaim didn't have music playing in the background to... this is going to change the world, says Chafetz Chaim, but he really did change the world. He said, I have the Mishnah Berura, and the Mishnah Berura is going to solve all the problems. First of all, he said, let me explain to you how it works. We start with the Shulchan Aruch, and then there are little letters that point you down to commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, which just shows you the basic background of each halacha, and a little bit of detail about each halacha, and most importantly, taking into account Magen Avraham, the Taz, Machs Shekel, Maimon Mordechai, Eliyahu Rabbah, everybody, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, taking into account everybody, because he says, I've looked them all up, I'll give you a final psak. So you'll actually know what to do. It's not going to be like opening one of those contemporary halachas farm where some say this, some say that, some say that, some say that. What do I do? Says Chafetz Chaim, I have the shoulders, I'm willing to tell you what to do. I'll give you an actual psak. Furthermore, he says, that's the main body of the Sefer. Then you have the Sharatzion. Sharatzion on the bottom tells you where you can find everything. A lot of times you're not going to know just from what he writes in Mishnah Berura where you can look it up for further Iyun. So Sharatzion is a footnote. It's just footnotes on the Tziyun is, you know, to quote or to cite. No, it's not Tzion. It has nothing to do with Zionism. A lot of people mispronounce it. Furthermore, there's Machlokas Achronim. So he says, you'll find which one has been accepted based on the Shaar Tzion and based on my Mishnah Berura. And he says, beyond that, beyond the Mishnah Berura, beyond the Shaar Tzion, I'm also going to give you the Bir Halacha. The Bir Halacha will provide you with more in-depth analysis, things that didn't fit into Shaari Tshuva, things that didn't fit into the Mishnah Berura. It's going to give you a lot more to discuss. You really want a Sugya B'iyun, and you can learn the Bir Halacha. Someone was just asking me last week in the Beis Medrash, what do you do when he disagrees in the Bir Halacha with what he writes in the Mishnah Berura? It's Adi Paskin. So I think based on how he describes the role of each, is that the Chafetz Chaim viewed the Mishnah Berura as the Posek Achron. The Bir Halacha is for further analysis, for questioning. Why does he sometimes have stiras? I think Rav Schechter said once, I don't know if the Chafetz Chaim doesn't say this, I think Rav Schechter said once, I don't know how he knows this, that the Chafetz Chaim actually didn't write every word of the Mishnah Berura. That he was like a general editor, that he had other people working on it also, and he was like, you know, like a lahavdil, like a professor in a university who writes papers by having his students write papers, and he just looks it over and makes sure that quality control and edits and whatever, and has his name on it. I don't know where he got that from. I know Darkei Tshuva is like that. I don't know, Mishnah Berurah. I think I heard of Shachta once saying about the Mishnah Berurah. I'm not sure. I don't know where that comes from. But anyway, so the Bir Halacha gives you more of the sugya. And then he says, at the end, he just concludes his Hakdama, or his first Hakdama, by saying, you should know, don't be choshed me. Don't think I just flippantly said this way or that way, mutter, asr, as if it didn't really matter. He says, ki iyanti bezras Hashem b'kol simin b'mikre adinim b'rishonim v'gam kim'at b'kol ha'achronim anal re'isi l'sponim b'divrayim. I read and paid careful attention to every rishon and every single achron, and I even got my hands on rare svarim. I did whatever I can, and v'kol zeh holy le'inyan ha'ataka shu'cha la'hatikas divrayim b'taim b'dimukam. So I made sure I understood every single achron exactly correctly, because I saw it inside. V'lo dvarim k'tzarim k'chukim. I didn't just read kitzer ideas. I was very, very careful about this. So he says, don't think that there wasn't a ton of work that went into this, and hopefully through reading this sefer, says the Chafetz Chaim, you'll have a clear knowledge of halacha, and you'll be able to know how to go about your day, and you'll be able to learn an amud of shulchan of Mishnah Berurah day, a siman of shulchan aruch day with Mishnah Berurah. You'll be able to get through it, and you'll be able to go quickly through Aruch Chaim with a real knowledge of how to behave on a day-to-day basis, to be able to know how to observe the halachas properly, and particularly the most important halachas. He never went beyond Aruch Chaim, because he thought these were by far the most important halachas that a person needs to know each and every day. Okay, maybe next time we'll get to the Hakdama and Hilchos Shabbos.